Hey guys, and I'm gonna stop saying guys, because I keep saying guys at work when I'm talking to females. Hey everyone, welcome to the Beyond the Scale podcast. You're sitting here with Corey. I'm gonna discuss UFC 266 coming up this weekend. You've also got Anthony Joshua taking on Alexander Usyk. It's a pretty stoked fucking card in the UFC, if I'm being honest. Just looking down the card, you've obviously got the two title fights between Valentina Shevchenko and Lauren Murphy, Alexander Volkanovski taking on Brian Ortega, which is the two Ultimate Fighter coaches, and then you've got the legend that is Nick Diaz taking on Robbie Lawler. I'm just finished watching the interview with Nick Diaz, and he's such an interesting character. I can see why people adore him. It's just his personality and his honesty as well. He just says that he doesn't feel confident, doesn't know if he's going to win, he's doubt himself. I think he's just very kind of straight up and straight talking. But if you've not seen that interview, definitely check it out. It's with Brett Okamoto. Also on the card, you've got Curtis Blaydes, Jairzinho Rozenstruik, you've got Jessica Andrade versus Cynthia Calvillo, Marlon Moraes versus Mirab Dvalishvili. Also got Dan Hooker taking on Nasrat Haqparast. Shamil Abdurahimov versus Chris Daukas. I'm on a fucking roll today. Roxanne Modafferi take on Tyler Santos. Uros Medic take on Jalen Turner. Nick Maximov take on Cody Brundage. Mats Smelsberger versus Martin Sano. And Omar Morales take on Jonathan Pierce. So a lot of fights in this card. A lot of good fights in this card. Obviously, two title fights, as we say. So just starting off, we've got Omar Morales, who is 11-1, a featherweight, taking on Jonathan Pierce, who's 10-4. Seen Omar Morales fight a couple of times. He's massive for that weight. His striking is pretty clinical. He got a good victory under his belt last time out, taking on Shane Young, the Maori speaking warrior. And he's taking on Jonathan Pierce, who's 10-4. Just looking down his record, last time out he beat Kai Kamaka versus Ground and Pound. Kai Kamaka is good in himself, good stand up, really solid fighter. So this should be a good one. I think it'll play out mostly on the feet. Another contender series guy. Don't know too much, if I'm being completely transparent, about Jonathan Pierce. So in this one, I am going to take Omar Morales based on his record of 11-1, and he looked really impressive last time out. Next up the card, you've got Mats Semelsberger at welterweight taking on Martin Sano. Smelsberger, what a fucking odd name. He is 8-3. Last time out, he got beat by Chaos Williams. But if you remember before that, he took on a guy, Jason Witt, and he knocked him out in the first round, 16 seconds in with a clean ass fucking counter right. So he's quite an exciting fighter, long and lanky. He's also beat Carlton Minas, who picked up a good win last week versus Mbaka Sanganay. Pretty solid fighter. I'm sure he's Australian. Nah, I'm talking absolute fucking shite. He's from Maryland. That sounds like it could be in Glasgow, Maryhill. He's from Maryland, 6 foot 1, fighting at 170, so quite a long. Semi the Jedi, as his nickname. He's taking on Martin Sano, who I believe is one of the Nick Diaz Army boys. He's 30-year-old, 5'11", fighting again at welterweight, 4-2-1. He got a good win over Jeff Neal in his first fight. Not a bad name to have on the resume, but he's lost his last two out in Bellator and World Series of Fighting. So I don't think he's going to have much of a looking in this one. I think he's only got the fight because he's one of Nick Diaz's army. You can totally imagine that'd be one of his must-haves to fight. I want you to pay me $1 million. I want you, my boys, to be on the card. Who else do we have on the card? Nick Maximov, again, one of Nick Diaz's boys, taking on Cody Brundage at middleweight, I believe. Next, Maximov is 6-0, weight class heavyweight, 6 foot. It's a small fucking heavyweight. This fight's not at heavyweight; it's at doesn't even say. He's, as I say, 6-0, current win streak, 12 wins. If you include amateur fights, got a lot of grappling experience with submission underground. I'm trying to see if he's fought anybody of name value on his record, but not really. But 6-0, not a bad record. He's taking on Cody Brunges, who's fighting out of Factory X under Mark Montoya. Again, 6 foot. This can't be a fucking heavyweight. Topology, you're lying to me. This is a, I think it's a middleweight. Yes, it's a middleweight. It's 185. Cody Brundage, 6-0-1. He has a loss in his right to William Knight. But apart from that, clean sweep across his record. He's got a loss in his record, Brian Battle, back in his amateur days. He was a split decision. As we know, Brian Battle was a good fighter. He was one of the winners of the contender series a few weeks ago. So this should be quite a good scrap. Next on the card, we've got Uros Medic, who is fighting out of Novi Sad, Serbia. I've watched him on the contender series again. Fucking nice variety of strikes. Quite an exciting fighter. He's 6'1", fighting at lightweight. Holy mother of God, he is tall boy. Nicknamed the Doctor, he's 28, fighting out of Alaska. 7-0, his record's pretty fucking solid. So two wins if you include the contender series, but his last one was a flying knee in the ground and pound, which I think was stopped far too late. Really solid fighter, as I say, flying knees. He's fighting under Rafael Cordero as well at King's MMA. So he should be a pretty solid stand-up fighter. I think this is a set-up fight for him. Actually, Jalen Turner's not bad as well. He's 10-5. Jalen the Tarantula Turner. Massive guys for lightweight. They are 6'3", fighting at lightweight. I'm 5'11", fighting at fucking heavyweight. Tubby McGee. Last out, he took two wins over Joshua Coulibal and Brock Weaver, but the step up in competition versus Max Favola and Vicente Luque, he lost both of them. So it seems when he goes against that kind of high caliber opposition, he's just not coming through with the goods. Probably going to play out. It's definitely going to play out on the feet. This one, both pretty solid strikers. Fun fight on the undercard, to be honest. Definitely going to watch that one. After that, you've got Roxanne Modafferi taking on Tyler Santos. Roxanne Modafferi is 25-18. She's been around for ever and a day. 5'7", fighting at flyweight. She's 39, the happy warrior. She has got a few... Last time she was out, she got defeated by Vivian Araújo. Never really getting finished, though. All her fights are usually decisions, split decisions. They got a good solid win over Macy Barber, which is cool to see. Macy Barber's a rising prospect, but she's got a loss to Lauren Murphy, who's fighting on the card versus Shevchenko. She's fought the who's who, to be honest. She's fought Sajara Eubanks, Nico Montano, Emily Whitmire, Shannon Dobson. She's fought a lot of good. Jennifer Meyer twice. A lot of fights on record. A lot of fights. She takes on Tyler Santos, who's 17-1-0. Check the guns on her. She is fighting at flyweight out of Brazil. She's got a win over Molly McCann, Gillian Robertson. Some good victories there. Seems like she's an up-and-comer. Obviously, pretty solid record. Most of those fights being in Brazil. She comes off the contender series. So the only loss she's got in the UFC is a split decision loss to Mara Barella. But good wins over Gillian Robertson and Molly McCann. They're both impressive to have on your CV. Should be quite an interesting fight. Roxanne Modafferi, she's got so much more experience, but we'll see how that one plays out. Next up, you've got Shamil Abdurahimov versus Chris Daukaus. Chris Daukaus is the brother of Kyle Daukaus, who I believe he's a police officer. 6'3", fighting out of Pennsylvania. He's 31. He's looked good so far in the UFC. He's looking, he actually just looks like a slightly bigger version of his brother Kyle Daukaus. Good hands, quick strikes. He beat Alexei Oleinik last time out. He's 3-0 in the UFC so far. I think this is really kind of, this is a good test for him. It's a good next step up before feeding them to some of the killers in the top 10. Shamil Abdurahimov is 20-5. I think this fight's been rescheduled quite a few times, twice. Jesus, Abdurahimov's had 5 cancelled bouts in a row. 2 to Daukaus, 1 to Sakai, and 2 to Cyril Gann. It's probably thankful that fight to Cyril Gann didn't go ahead, to be honest. Last time out, this guy just does not fight enough. Holy shit. 2019 was the last time he fought. And that was against Curtis Blades. As I was saying before, Dottie rudely interrupted me. He lost to Curtis Blades by 1,000 pounds in 2019. He's actually got some fucking decent wins. He's beat Marcin Tybura, Andrei Arlovsky, Chase Sherman, Walt Harris. He's actually got some strong wins. I think this guy is a bit underrated. He just doesn't fight enough. So when he does have a good win, check this out. He's fought against Shamil Abdurahimov. That is fucking twin brother. No, it can't be his twin brother because I didn't have the same name. He's got a loss against Thiago Santos on his record, and he's fought Jeff Monson. So he's been around for a fucking while. Since 2008 was his first fight, so he's been fighting another 13 years. Yeah, so he's not fought in 13 years. But, as I say, got some decent wins on his record. So, this is Chris Daukaus ranked 11th and Shamil ranked 12th. Next up, we've got Dan the Hangman Hooker taking on Nasrat Haghbarast. Dan Hooker is 20-10. He's struggled a little bit lately. He obviously had that massive knockout where Michael Chandler punched his lights out, knocked his block off. But Dan Hooker, the caliber he fought versus Nasrat is just incomparable. He's fought the who's who. He's fought Paul Felder, Ali Quinta, James Vick, Gilbert Burns. He's had a victory, round one knockout over Gilbert Burns, which is now proven to be a great victory looking back at what Gilbert Burns has done recently. He's also got a guillotine choke for Mark Dukesi, lost to Yair Rodriguez. He's had a lot of fights in the UFC for still being quite young. I mean, Dan Hooker's only 31. He's tall, again, for the weight division, 6 foot. And he's been training with City Kickboxing. I'd be interested to see how this camp's went for him, because by all accounts, it sounds quite stressful around visa, the lockdown and COVID situation in Australia, which I think's probably not helped his camp. But on the other side of things, you've got Nasrat, whose mother died about 2 weeks ago, so he'll be going through. Be interested to see what kind of place he's in, because it could either go two ways. He shouldn't be fighting, or he's now got a reason to fight. But yeah, back on to Dan Hooker. He's lost his last two to Dustin Poirier and Michael Chandler, which top two in the division. Essentially, before that, he got a split decision to Paul Felder, which was all-out war over in Australia. Absolutely loved that fight. Two absolute warriors going for it. Before that, he's got a win over Ali Quinta, which I actually can't... I forgot that fight happened. I need to go re-watch it. Win versus James Vick. So he was on a bit of a tear until he came up against the top two of the division. So I think Dan Hooker will be too good for him here. I think he's got a point to prove. If you can keep him at length and use his reach, use the knees up the middle, I think you could finish him. Nasrat has looked good in the UFC so far. He's 13-3 overall, and he's got 2 wins in the last 2 versus Alex Munoz and Rafa Garcia. But he did drop one to Drew Dober. Drew Dober is a great kickboxer in his own right, as is Dan Hooker, so that could be kind of kryptonite when he comes up against somebody with just as good Muay Thai and kickboxing. How does he deal with it? But I have been really impressed with Nasrat. He looks like Kelvin Gastelum's little brother. He looks like he gets thick during winter or during off season, should I say. He's fighting out of Germany, but he was originally born in Afghanistan. But now he's fighting out of Hamburg, Germany. But he's got an affiliation with TriStar and Faraz Zahabi out of the guys in Quebec. Is it Quebec or is it Montreal? Anyway, should be a good fight. 5'10". Serious question. Does anyone want a dog? It's a fucking pain in the arse. Just going back to the card, we have got, and after the Dan Hooker fight, you're looking at Marlon Moraes versus Merab the Machine Dvalishvili. Marlon Moraes, I thought this guy was absolutely class. But just lately, he's really stumbled. He really had a fall from greatness. And last time out, he got knocked out pretty viciously by Rob Font, who's a killer. But Marlon Moraes' skill sets might be in striking. He's thick. He's very muscled for the weight class, which I think doesn't carry his cardio very well past round one. He empties his load pretty fast. Totally blew his gas tank in a few fights I've watched him recently. He does have victory over Jose Aldo, which I know is a contentious one. A lot of people think that Jose Aldo won that fight. I, however, do not. Marlon Moraes did the worst damage. He landed the bigger blows, but I know a lot of people disagree with me. He's also got victories over Aljamain Sterling, Jimmy Rivera, Rafael Sansal. And again, this is quite similar in the fact that to the Nasrat fight, he has fought a better caliber of people. He's fought Henry Cejudo, Corey Sanhagen. He's only fighting the best of the best, which Merab has not been. So this is kind of a crossroads where Merab could essentially take over Marlon Moraes here. This fight is going to be a first round knockout to Marlon Moraes, or a three-round decision victory where Merab just takes him down over and over again. But it's an exciting one. I think Merab's been struggling to get fights just with his style of fighting. So aggressive, it's so relentless pressure, and taking him down over and over again just does not give up. I'm excited to see this one of where Merab and where this plays out. Merab's obviously fighting out of Cerro Longo in New York. He's on a bit of a tear. I think he should be 8-0 in the UFC so far, but it was a bit of a contentious one around Ricky Simone where they thought he was out, but he wasn't. But he's came a long way from a guy who lost his first fight versus Frankie Sens by a split decision to then beating Terry and Ware, Brad Katona. Casey Kenny, Gustavo Lopez, and John Dodson. And Cody Stamen last time out. Some solid victories there, but he's not fought a top five, top 10 guy as yet. I think, as I said, because he's been struggling to get the fights. Same height. Merab's fighting out of Tbilisi in Georgia. He's only 30 years old. He's a bit of a grinder. Seems like quite a good guy as well. Next on the card, we have Jessica Andrade taking on Cynthia Calvillo. Jessica Andrade's 21-9, the Brazilian, who is the former strawweight champion. Last night, she lost to Valentina Shevchenko for the title. She's lost a grappling bout since then. But her record's got a lot of red in it. You look at her Wikipedia page and ain't a good picture recently. She's lost 3 out of her last 4. Yeah, 2 absolute beasts like Weili Zhang, Rose Namajunas, and Valentina Shevchenko. But when you think back in history, it looks like a lot of red on it. This is her trying to get back into title contention. Take her on Cynthia Calvillo. Jessica Andrade, as we know, she's a unit. She's a powerhouse. She's got that one punch knockout. She's only 5'1", so tiny, but she packs a fucking punch. And she's super aggressive as well. She's going to be in Cynthia's face from the get-go. Cynthia, who's 9-2-1, fighting out of San Jose in California. She's 5'4", so slightly taller, and she is 34. Last time out, she lost to Caitlin Shukagian and has a victory over Jessica Ai. Victory over Jojo Calderwood and Pollyanna Battaglia back in the day. But I'd say back in the day, 4 years ago. Back in the day. I think Jessica Anzad will be just too strong for her. With the caliber of people she's thought are striking, she'll be in her face from the get-go. I think she is going to win this via first-round knockout. After that, we've got Curtis Blades taking on Jairzinho Biggie Boy. Rosenstrike, Curtis Blades is 14-3. Everyone knows how solid a fighter Curtis Blades is. He trains at altitude. With Team Elevation, so fitness is always on his side. He can go 5 rounds, pretty solid wrestling. He lost by a massive uppercut from Derek Lewis. I think he's literally just woke up from that. But he's only lost to big power punchers, twice to Ngannou and once to Jairzinho, once to Derek Lewis, sorry. But he's got some solid wins on his record. He's got wins over Shamil Abdurahimov, Junior Dos Santos, Volkov, Mark Hunt, Olenek, Overeem. I'd be interested to see if he can get through this challenge and he can solve the problem that is Jairzinho Rosenstrike, who just has to hit you once. I think the problem here is Curtis Blades has to be perfect for 15 minutes, whereas Jairzinho just has to be perfect for a second and land a big one on his chin. Let's do a good test to see if Curtis Blades... I'd be interested to see if Curtis Blades ever becomes champion, because he's always looked like he's got championship capability and pedigree, but he's never quite made that next step. So he's never been in a title fight, but he'd always be on the cusp. Whereas on the other hand, you've got Jairzinho Rosenstrike, who's proven kickboxer. He's sitting number 7th in the rankings, both 6'4". He's fighting now with Suriname. Last time out, he beat Augusto Sakai. He's got wins over Dos Santos, Orim, Andre Arlovsky, Alan Crowder. But he's lost to both Ngannou and Cyril Gane. So it's going to be hard to justify a title fight, despite the winner of Ngannou, Gane, since he's lost to them pretty recently in the last kind of year or so. But then would they make a Curtis Blades versus Ngannou 3 when he's lost the last 2? Struggle to see the justification for that one also, so not really sure the meaning of this fight. But your typical striker vs grappler matchup, and I'm sure it'll be exciting regardless. After that, you've got the people's main event, Robbie Lawler, Ruthless Robbie, taking on Nick Diaz, both with pretty expansive records, both fight-wise and over a massive period of time. These guys fought 209 months ago. Quite a cool number. Nick Diaz is looking... He didn't look in as good shape as I expected him to. We've seen some pictures released prior to it, and he looked like he was shredded. Just looking at his record, I didn't appreciate he was 6'1". The Diaz brothers are infamous. He's fighting with Cesar Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. I'm interested to see the reason he's doing this. Is he doing this because he wants to fight again, or is he doing this because he's skint? I reckon he's probably skint. He likes a bevy. He's quite often seen in Vegas nightclubs drinking, so has that had an effect on him? I didn't realise his record is so fucking strong. He lost to George St. Pierre and Carlos Condit. But before that, he'd wins over BJ Penn, Paul Daly, Evangelista Santos, KG Nunes. Fuck, he's got some. He's an OG of the game. He fought Robbie Lawler in 2004 and won that by punches. There was a bit of a comment on his style of fighting, and he looked a bit slow, but if you look at videos from when he was in his prime, he still looked a bit slow in his shadow boxing, so I think that's just an illusion. I love the comment that the Diaz brothers don't get beat, they just run out of time, which I think is true with Nate Diaz, even in his last one against Leon Edwards. If that had continued, he would have won. And he's fought the who's who. He's fought George St. Pierre, Carlos Condit. And the last fight I actually watched him was Anderson Silva back in 2015, which was a no contest because I'm pretty sure Nick Diaz was smoking weed or some fucking stupid things surrounding the fight. But great to see Nick Diaz back. And I watched an interview with him with Brett Okamoto, struggling to get my words out, which was an interesting interview. He just talked about his anxiety and his feelings before the fight. He doesn't want to do it. He doubts himself. He thinks he's going to lose. So honest. And I think that's just why people love him. He is taking on Robbie Lawler, who has been much more active. He is 28 and 15. He has lost his last four, but if you see who they're to, he's lost to Rafael dos Anjos, Ben Askren, Colby Covington, Neil Magny, all top 10 guys, all current. But his last victory was about Donald Cerrone, and then he's got Carlos Condit before that, where I think that was the one where he won the title. And everyone can remember the legendary fight against Rory McDonald where his lip was split. These guys have both been through the trenches. They're both strikers. They're both stand and trade. They're both fucking fans' favourites. So I'm really excited for this one personally. I think it's a good match because they're both kind of 38, 39, both at a similar place in their career, that they're not going to be title holders again. They just want fun fights. Despite what Nick Diaz says that he wants Kamaru Usman, he would get fucking ruined by Kamaru Usman. I'm buzzing for this one. I think Robbie Lawler. I can't pick against Nick Diaz. I can't, so I'm gonna take Nick Diaz in this one. Jumping into the co-main, we've got Lauren Murphy take on Valentina Shevchenko. Lauren Murphy is a fucking tank. She's won her last five key or notable victories, and that were Jojo Calderwood, Roxanne Modafferi, Andrea Lee. Not really beating the who's who that division. Yeah, she's got a decent run, five in a row, but she's not really fought any big contenders. I actually thought she lost the fight to Jojo Calderwood last time out, and that's probably her best victory on the record. So she's got a lot of losses as well to Sarah McMahon, Liz Carmouche, Caitlin Shukagian, all of which Valentina's beat pretty convincingly and pretty easily. So I think this can only go one way, if I'm being honest. Interesting story about how Lauren Murphy came to the world of mixed martial arts. She was dropping her son off to try and get him out of the house, and she ended up liking it herself. And her first fight was it was in 2010. So she's been fighting professionally for 11 years, which is not a long time to get to a title fight, 11 years. So it's a cool story. Another corner, you've got the remaining and defending champion, Valentina the Bullet Shevchenko, who is probably, I think, anyway, in my humble opinion, she is the number one woman fight pound for pound in the world. If not one of just the pound for pound best. She has been on a fucking tear lately. She beat Joanna Jędrzejczyk. She beat Jessica Ai, Liz Carmouche, Caitlin Shukagian, Jennifer Maia, Jessica Andrade. She's been, the only losses she's got on her record are to Amanda Nunes. That's not true. She got beat by Liz Carmouche back in the day, back in 2010. She's actually been fighting professionally for like 17 years. Both in kickboxing and MMA. She's got victories over Holly Holm, Juliana Pena, who's fighting for the title recently. So, stacked record. I just can't see where Lauren Murphy would beat Valentina. Valentina's better on the feet, better on the floor. Just a solid fighter over, and she's generally just a fucking machine. She's fighting at Kyrgyzstan. I fucking hate the dance she does at the end. It makes me die inside. But She's a good fighter. She's actually not as old as I thought she was. She's 33. I would put my mortgage on Valentina taking this one pretty convincingly. Jumping into the main event, we have Brian T-City Ortega taking on Alexander the Great Volkanovski. Both only with one loss each on the record. I think Alexander Volkanovski will just be happy not to have to think about Max Holloway anymore. He had to think about him for the last few years, both in Max's role as champion, thinking I need to get to him, or defending his belt against him, then rematching him. I watched back the Max Holloway Volkanovski fight again, and I think I think Max Holloway won that last fight. I think it should be 1-1, so I would like to see that fight happen again. Volkanovski is 5'6". He fights under Eugene Behrman, which, as we all know, have great plans. They're great at executing the plan. They're very tactical and strategic in their approach. He's never lost in the UFC so far. He's got wins over Shane Young, Jeremy Kennedy, Darren Elkins, Chad Mendes, Jose Aldo, and two over Max Holloway. If he beats Brian Ortega and he gets a few wins, he could go down as the best featherweight ever. He's got two victories over the thought about best heavyweight ever, or both of them actually, in Jose Aldo and Max Holloway. Pretty fucking strong record, 22-1. He's good all over. I watched him again last night, and his movement is brilliant. The way he weaves in and out, switches stances, the angles he cuts. I didn't quite appreciate how good Volko was until I watched it back. And I watched The Ultimate Fighter, and he seems like quite an all-round good guy. He was good with his team. Seems quite genuine, quite up for a laugh. I think that's a kind of Australian nature and background of him too. I'd be interested to see if he takes it to the floor, because Brian Ortega has a wicked guillotine, but Volkanovski is known for his ground and pound and his wrestling. So I think this will mostly play out on the feet. I can't see him taking it to the ground, not against such a credentialed jiu-jitsu artist as Brian Ortega, who himself has reinvented himself as Brian 2.0 or Brian 3.0. He looked amazing against the Korean Zombie Chan Sung Jung last time out. That spinning elbow was wicked that he dropped him with late on in the fight. Before that, he obviously had the doctor stoppage to Max Holloway. That he's definitely tough. He's got that Mexican grit about him. And he's changed up his corner, so he's no longer just got Henner Gracie. He's got a kickboxing coach, wrestling coach, a boxing coach. He's only 5'8". I had in my head that Brian Ortega was way taller than that. He looks way taller than Volkanovski, who just looks small and compact. He's only 30 years old as well, so he's still quite young in the game. His first fight was in 2010 as well. Victories on his record include Frankie Edgar, where he knocked him out of that wicked uppercut, Cub Swanson, guillotine, Renato Moicano, guillotine. It's cool. Renato Moicano is a high-level black belt in his own right, so cool to see that he managed to get that guillotine on. We need to go back and watch that fight. His striking looked way more accurate, way more variety of strikes last time. I really quite enjoyed watching against Korean Zombie, and it made me quite excited for this match. I do think Volkanovski will be too strong for him. I can't see a way that Volkanovski doesn't win this fight, to be honest. That's the way I think it's going to go. Exciting main event. It's an exciting card. I can't wait to watch it. Debating staying up for it. Will I not? I hope everyone enjoys the fight. I hope the people's main event lives up to people's expectations. In terms of other stuff I want to look at, please go on Francis Ngannou's Instagram page. He has put a post out in around his uncle being a pioneer just for their family. It's quoted as he's quoted as saying, despite his overwhelming responsibility between multiple wives and tens of kids, he's our biggest strength. Multiple wives. Sounds decent. Not for that. There was one more thing I had to flag. It was that Paul Felder is back training. He's looking like he could be fighting at flyweight. Looks so thin. It's strange the way his body composition and shapes changed due to the Ironman work he's been doing on the triathlon side of things, which is kind of expected. But if anyone knows me, I'm a massive Paul Felder nut hugger, and we'd love to see him back in Octagon. I think he'd retire too early. I think he's got quite a few fights left in him. And maybe if he went down a weight class, it would be even more powerful and exciting to watch the German dragon. But that's all for me. I hope everyone's enjoyed the podcast, and I hope everyone has a great weekend and enjoys the fights. Thank you.